As we all know, the biological and social stimulation of the family leads to private reflection outside party needs.
You're thoughtful.
Unorthodox loyalties which can only lead to thought crime.
That's a mashup of sound from the film adaptation of George Orwell's classic dystopian novel 1984, published back in 1949. Now, I watched the film on Monday, and gosh, it's harrowing, a harrowing 1 hour and 53 minutes. And it's the subject of today's book to film segment. And you and I are joined by the discerning duo. The discerning duo. I've workshopped this.
Double plus good.
Alicia Sometimes and Thomas Corbell. You've read the book, you've seen the film.
Absolutely.
You've done your homework.
Absolutely.
All right. This was your idea, Thomas, 1984. Why?
It was. A few factors fell into place that made me think this would be a really appropriate book and film to do this month. First of all, the novel has had a resurgence in sales, especially in the US. This kind of whole idea of a post-truth era that we've entered, that a lot of people are associating with President Trump, has got people very worried about what the future may pan out to be. And so book sales of this have had this kind of, resurgence. There's also stories of cinemas in the US are screening the film version for free as part of a protest. And also, this was a really significant film for John Hurt, early-ish in his career. And because he died recently, I thought it would be a nice tribute to talk about it. So lots of factors make this a very relevant, timely text.
And do you think people are finding relevance once they read the book or see the film? And would you find it as a commentary on our times, Alicia?
I think that it was relevant in its day. It was relevant when the film came out in the 80s.
But people are buying it now.
And people are buying it now. That's right. And I think that it is a timeless book because I think wherever we go, human nature is that we don't want authoritative power taking over our lives, and that there are some people who do give in to that, and that it is something that is very politically relevant right now.
Let's remind people what it's about, because there'll be a lot of people who haven't read the book in ages. Just tell us briefly what's going on.
Well, Winston Smith is a sort of low-ranking member of the ruling party in London in the nation of Oceania. The party watches through screens everywhere, and of course there's the infamous Big Brother, which may or may not be true, as in it could be cult, it could be what everyone's thinking, but it is the figure of the party and they control everything. And Winston works in the Ministry of Truth and he rewrites history, literally. So the ruling class is everywhere, implementing an invented language called Newspeak, and doesn't want any rebellion at all, any political rebellion, and also takes over the individual as well. So you're not allowed to have individual thoughts, individual desire, and even sexuality becomes one of those things where the orgasm is outlawed.
Which seems like a strange move to make. It can't be a very popular one. But they've got a whole sort of ideology of why sexual intimacy is a danger to the state.
It's a really complex ideology that's delivered in this book. I mean, Orwell put a lot of thought into how this totalitarian regime may operate. And I think what has the real longevity from this text is the way it controls our emotions and our thoughts. I mean, I think the kind of brutal dictatorship that's described in the book, we haven't really seen manifest as such in the West. We've certainly seen it in other countries. But I think the relevance of this book is the way it talks about the way governments can influence our thinking and our emotion. And one of the ideas in the book is this suppression of sexuality. Although I would argue that's an element I don't think Orwell quite got right. I think it's actually quite the opposite. I think we've kind of had an explosion of sexuality in a very commodified way, and it's sort of part of maybe the distraction that's used to prevent us from thinking about things of real importance. On the other hand, it's significant that one of the main acts of rebellion committed by Winston Smith in the novel is to have a loving sexual relationship, because sex has been sort of outlawed in the text. I think a genuine affection and love is actually an act of rebellion, and I think that as sort of a metaphor for being anti-fascist is quite relevant. And we've seen it. We've seen that kind of thing in other anti-fascist texts. I think of the famous Italian film Salò, a really harrowing film about fascists abusing a group of young people. And one of the few moments of light in that film is when the two of the young people actually have a genuine affectionate sexual relationship. So it's the idea... It's the idea that these false emotions are what is starting to govern us, and actually to break free of that and to genuinely feel something is possibly an act of rebellion in these times of artificiality.
And one of the heroes, I think, in the book and the film is Julia, because she is accused of being a rebel from the waist downwards. And I think that she kind of is. And even though she gives in to the party and is taken over by them, I think she has a little element that she keeps to herself. So I think she's the true rebel in the book. I think she is the bit of the hero.
I think so. And I like the idea, although they see the sexual act as what is being rebellious, I think the fairly explicit subtext, sorry, explicit text, is it's their love that's yep. rebellious. Yeah. And the crushing horror of this book is this authoritarian government has the power to obliterate that love.
And boy, do they do that.
But also to watch you wherever you go. They know everything you do. Yep. Even when you think you found a safe place where you can't be observed, they're watching you.
Because Orwell wrote this coming off the heels of World War II, of course, and he was definitely anti-fascist. And when you think of totalitarianism at the moment, we're thinking of the right, whether it's the right in Europe or the right in America. But this, obviously, he was very, very scared of the left, the far left, and thinking that this government could watch everything you do, dictate everything you do. And it's so fascinating.
He described himself as a democratic socialist, and that's something he pursued. But I think he was horrified and disillusioned by how so many revolutions by the left ended up in another totalitarian state. And the novel explores this idea that all revolutions do is just swap the middle for the top.
Yeah.
So
there's a really great commentary on the way in which war actually isn't there to be won. War is there to create this sense of urgency and crisis that means the state can use the supreme power because the threat never stops.
War makes people angry and fearful, and those are two very powerful emotions that the state can use to control the thoughts of people. I think that commentary is extraordinarily relevant still.
This is Books and Arts, and we're talking about the book 1984 by George Orwell with critics Alicia Sometimes and Thomas Caldwell. So let's talk about the film, which came out in 1985. That was, nicely planned. It stars John Hurt, who gives a virtuoso performance. But I don't know. I just didn't feel it was about us. I looked at the film and I thought, well, this is a sort of bleak other world. This is a critique of a society that doesn't apply to me. I don't remember feeling that about the book. It's a long time since I've read the book, but I just thought the film just was a kind of thing in itself.
I think it had that dystopian future element about it, and of course 1984 came and went and we didn't exactly get this world, so it feels like an alternate history. There are so many elements that we can relate to today, whether it is the government spying on us or knowing what we're doing, but I think the bleakness, that brown and black universe of the film is something that hasn't come to be.
So London is in ruins. It just looks like a society, well, it would have looked during the Blitz, I guess.
That's right.
Constantly just fighting their way through rubble into dirty rooms where the water doesn't work and everything's filthy and the lights don't go on.
Although, funnily enough, it was all shot in London around April and May 1984 when the book is set. So the film was actually shot in the location at the time that the book is set. But I guess this is a case where the setting and the year, we need to accept these as allegory. It's not, Orwell wasn't, it's not a predictive text. It's an allegory for the way society might develop, but I do actually kind of concur with what you're saying, Michael. And I think science fiction, and it's sort of science fiction.
Yeah, it is.
Is most effective, especially when it's set in the future, when you do recognise a sense of that could be now, but in a few years' time. This does feel quite removed, and I appreciated an awful lot about the film, but I just kept on thinking, is this possibly an unfilmable book? Is the nature of this book fundamentally uncinematic because it is set in entirely bleak circumstances, and a lot of it is monologues.
And it's so funny you should say that, because in 2015 I saw at the Melbourne Festival a play that Headlong from the UK, the Headlong Company, had put on, and you're sitting there for 2.5 hours
of 1984
in your seat. And it is absolutely horrific. My heart was racing. I wanted to throw up. I was my hands were completely sweaty. I felt terrible. And I was wondering, you know, the film didn't do that for me. It was almost bordering on boring.
Are you describing that production as if your reaction is a good thing?
Well, the thing is, yeah, theatre is supposed to make you think and feel, but I felt sick. Yeah. And I came out of that and I had all those emotions of, oh my God, this is what a government could do if we were in this place. But the film didn't do that.
No, it didn't. Although I still appreciated a lot of it. I should say I'm very intimate with the theatre adaptation of this novel.
Because you played Winston.
In 1993, my school did a production of 1984 and I played Winston Smith.
Oh, you should get to reprise the whole thing.
Well, it was difficult watching John Hurt thinking, yeah, I reckon John Hurt probably did that performance better than me.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
I think he's got the edge in me as an actor. Although I broke my arm in the dress rehearsal.
Well, that would have added...
And did she slip on a banana?
Did the performance... No, it was one of the torture scenes that we were rehearsing and it went wrong. And,
wow.
And I did the play with a broken arm strapped to me, so...
Must have made the love scenes a little tricky.
Oh, that was so awkward. Like, I was the most awkward teenager. So
it was
method acting. I don't know who there was.
You don't know? That's a hurtful thing to say.
I've forgotten. It was a long time... Actually, I can name drop somebody who now is quite famous was in that production, but I don't want to embarrass them.
So the state got hold of you. But
yeah,
besides being a really political book, this reminds me it's a very personal book. And when Winston turns on Julia, I think that is one of the most horrific things in the book, that he says, do it to Julia.
Yeah.
That's the powerful part of this text, I think, looking at how when you control language the way this government does and when you rewrite history with falsehoods, you can change the way people remember things and feel.
Yep.
And I think that's the stuff that's most relevant.
Yep.
This idea that if we say a lie enough times, you will start to believe this untruth. This idea of doublethink, to simultaneously hold two views which are completely in opposition. And the idea of newspeak, this language where you strip away more and more words and you reduce any complex or creative thought to, you know, we see it today with three-word slogans. You know, we have a news cycle, I think, that's dominated with this massive dumbing down of complex ideas, and politicians are responding to that now. This is some of the stuff Orwell was talking about. I think we see it in popular culture, even the way people communicate online, the way words in the dictionary are being changed now to reflect common usage. But it's often words that meant a very specific thing and now being made to mean many multiple things. So I feel like there is a threat on language, and this book predicted all of that.
It's interesting, though, that you've gone back to the book.
Yes.
You know, we usually, in this segment, we then talk about the film, but you really don't want to talk about the film. It's the book that keeps drawing you back.
The film's admirable. And look, John Hurt is so good in the film. I think we should recognise he was an actor who embodied amazing physicality, and the scenes where he's just so wretched and beaten in this are incredible.
And it's Richard Burton as well, isn't it, in his last performance?
Playing O'Brien in his final performance, yeah.
And there was a 1956 version which had Donald Pleasence in it, but also a 1954 series with Peter Cushing, who plays Moff Tarkin in the Star Wars series. So I would have loved to have seen that. I saw a little bit on some online things, and it looks really interesting. But yeah, I don't think they've captured it well. And can they? I don't know. That waits to be seen.
Well, there's been talk for a while now of another go at adapting it. But my suspicion is it's an unadaptable story.
Well, it's so horrific.
Because But also, I don't think it's a very cinematic story.
Right.
Yeah.
It's in your mind.
Well, we'll just have to see. I mean, I don't know why the film doesn't work, because it ticks a lot of boxes.
It
looks
it
great.
Yeah.
The performances are all terrific. The music is great.
By the Eurythmics.
Yeah. Well, also the music that they've written for hymns and patriotic songs. They all feel terribly English and terribly stirring. So it does. All the elements seem to be there, but somehow it's not the book.
You know, the funny thing is, when they were shooting this, Terry Gilliam was shooting his film Brazil, and they used some of the same locations.
Ah.
But Gilliam went for this kind of absurdist fantasy take, and one of the working titles for Brazil at one point was 1984 and a half.
Yeah.
to reflect the idea was kind of a comedic version of 1984. The focus in Brazil is more it's bureaucracy that's causing this dehumanization. But I think Gilliam, who's such a visual director, found a way to really make these ideas work cinematically.
Yeah,
we got weasel words.
We got to stop. Thank you so much. That's been such a great conversation. We've been talking about the film and the book of George Orwell's 1984. Tell me what you think of the book. Is it a book for our times? If you've seen the film, join the conversation. Have a chat to us on Facebook. Thomas Caldwell and Alicia sometimes have been with us.